Tones and I and Dance Monkey, or Dance Monkey as they say. I have just started the show and I've already had to be strict with producer Ollie. He needs to learn a lesson. Hello, hello and welcome to Live and Local with BB Lynch, Dame BB Lynch. We have a brilliant show lined up for you tonight. We have music, we have guests, we have probably award-winning radio till 10 p.m. Should we do it? Ocean Colour Scene and The Day We Caught the Train. Do you remember? Do you remember getting trains? So something's cheered me up. So this is a bit of behind the scenes-ness, right? Which I don't know if you need to know, but I like, you know, I like to paint a picture. So in the studio, we have TV screens, and that's for if there's a big breaking news story, and they rely on me because I'm quite a renowned news journalist and broadcaster to break it. And sometimes it's on, you know, BBC One and the volume's down. And the last few weeks when it was on, my little hazel eyes, slightly crinkly hazel eyes, kept popping up to the screen and thinking, oh, what's that? What's that? I don't know what that is. And this programme kind of caught me in bursts. I'm not saying I wasn't concentrating on you because that would just be rude. I was, of course, concentrating on you. But when I was concentrating less on you, my eye would go to the screen. I'd be like, what is this programme? Anyway, a couple of nights ago, I kind of worked out where it was in the schedule and I found it on iPlayer and it's called Traces. Oh, I loved it. Have a look, because I know we all need TV shows to get us through lockdown. What number is it? 2003? And you need a new show, and maybe you haven't seen Traces. And if you haven't seen it, have a look. It's honestly so fabulous, and with female leading cast and mainly female crew and directors and producers. And so I'm thrilled about that, obviously. Absolutely brilliant. So have a little look. Treat yourself. Also, treat yourself by continuing to listen tonight, please, because we have a great show lined up for you. Let me tell you about this evening's show. From 9, we'll be enjoying an hour of upload. We've got some great contributions and we'll be chatting with one of the creators. And in a few minutes, I'll be speaking with professional chef and entrepreneur Jacqueline Wise. And I might share some little cooking tips with Jacqueline. Let's see how she behaves. It's going to be a great show. So please stay with us. Ray and Regardless. I am really happy to introduce my first guest tonight. I'm not allowed to share a recipe with her, but I don't know, I might. It depends. Welcome to Live and Local, chef and entrepreneur Jacqueline Wise. Hi, Jacqueline.
Hello, good evening. How are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
Yes, I'm good, thanks. I'm so excited to be talking to you this evening. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh,
I can't tell you how much I appreciate it.
You are so welcome. I'm blown away by your CV. Let's start at the beginning and let's start of the nightmare that you got out of journalism.
Well, yes. Well,
how long were you a journalist for?
Also the kind of even worse nightmare, which is on the other side of it, selling advertising.
Oh, I mean, you've been through it.
Yeah. Well, it's very difficult to make much money in journalism. And
yes.
I was working as a yachting journalist briefly.
Oh.
Did a history degree originally. But I've always loved sailing and outdoor life, obviously good food as well. You've got to build up the appetite, right? but yes, I ended up selling advertising for Ski & Board magazine and a number of others, which was great to start with. And I loved living in London.
Yeah.
Made quite a bit of money as well in my early 20s. But at the same time, I knew just something was missing.
Yeah.
And I had a really difficult experience when one of my clients I sold a big campaign to, thought I was helping their business, called me up and said, nope, we're bankrupt. Can't spend any money. It's all your fault. You sold us a campaign that didn't work. And, I mean, obviously, I was just a sales girl. I didn't do their artwork or anything like that. But I felt completely responsible. I know it wasn't, but at the same time, it was just the kind of catalyst for me to be like, you know what? I am not creating anything positive here. I just can't do this anymore. My conscience was eating me up. Anxiety was becoming a problem. I just thought, you know what, I've got to get out of here. And cooking has been my constant companion and constant friend. So that's where I went.
How old were you when you made the decision to retrain?
I would have been 22, I think.
Okay, so that's still young enough that it's, you know, doable.
Yeah, maybe I just had my 23rd birthday, actually. Mm. Yes, yeah, I think so. So it was 10 years ago now.
And talk about right decision. So this is a CV. So worked at some Michelin starred restaurants, and the Ritz, and Buckingham Palace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would say actually some of the most valuable places I worked would not be places you've heard of, and not those fancy places, but actually the tiny little country pubs in the middle of nowhere with chefs that don't even call themselves chefs, they call themselves cooks. And the passion and drive and knowledge that they have in the most understated way possible has been, you know, probably more influential than some of the big names that you just mentioned.
You know, when you work at these places, do you have to do an NDA for working at the Buckingham Palace?
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. The red tape. So much paperwork. But, oh, my God, it was incredible. I remember working under a 9-foot chandelier one day when we were doing the staff party for 1,800 people. And I was one of a brigade of 60 chefs that was you know, there cooking for them. And the royal family were going from sort of, you know, room to room to sort of mingle amongst the different kind of areas of the house that all worked, you know, there, and you know, all their different kind of contacts, etc., etc. And they put me on the front line, because this is very early on in my career as well. Like, oh yes, right, you're a woman, you must be really dexterous, you have to go on canapes, final thing.
I mean, dexterous. Yeah,
great. Luckily I am really dexterous and I was really good at it and I was quick, but that kind of, you know, the assumption, I found that consistently later on in my career as well. So, oh, you're a female chef. Oh, great. We'll put you on larder then. You'll be doing the pastry. Like, what? What? No.
That's so weird.
I don't want to just make desserts because I'm a girl. You know, give me the damn meat. Come on. You know, I want to cook all the big stuff on the fires, you know.
Well, Give Me the Damn Meat is the name of your book. So when you do the book, that's the title. Can I ask you something about the Queen? And you can just, I mean, obviously you have to answer because we're on air. Does she have a snacks cupboard?
I don't know. What? I would imagine so. I imagine it contains lots of biscuits.
Yeah. Shortbread. Dutch original.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, actually, I have a story about the Queen because my mum, who is a really amazing, inspirational woman, she found a load of new homes for a lot of the Queen's horses. The ones that didn't take to driving and that sort of thing. And they used to ask, well, what happened to that one? Oh, Caroline Wise, it's my mum, sold that horse and found it in a new home. This happened numerous times to the point where the Queen said, I think I better meet this Caroline Wise. And so my mum, you know, who left school at 14, set her own business at 17. Her first horse was bought by my dad when she was 15. Went up to Buckingham Palace and met the Queen and had tea and shortbread.
That's so great. What a brilliant story.
That she wore that day, and she said the Queen, she was terrified. And the Queen was so friendly and even swore in front of her. like that, referring to one of the horses, like, oh, that horse was a right little, what's it? I better not swear, I'm on BBC, right?
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, not allowed
it's
to
okay
that,
for the Queen, but Jacqueline, don't push
it. Yeah, no, exactly. but yeah, it was, yeah, this is the thing. I think, you know, you never quite know where your life is going to take you.
I love
this. I think having an open mind is so important, isn't it? And yeah. My mum never would have dreamed that that would have been the case. Yeah. She hardly ever tells anybody about it. So I have to, you know, go on about how awesome she is.
I think that's amazing. And you said your dad bought your mum her first horse when he was 15. She was 15.
Yes. I was 16. Sorry. I think she was just turned 16. Yeah, but she'd been wanting that particular horse when she was still 15.
Yeah.
And they're still together now.
Oh.
And I think they've just had the, 44th wedding anniversary.
Get them on the phone later and find out what the secret is. I can't get a second date. And they've got...
That's not true. You're probably too fussy, darling.
It's very, very true. So producer Ollie's warned me that I'm not allowed to give you any recipes. Now, I'm...
Well, that's not true. I'm a sponge. I can learn recipes from anybody.
If you've got a pen and paper in front of you, I will just give this to you because... This incredible talent, and we're going to talk about your businesses in a minute and how the pandemic's affected them, because I can imagine it really has, but let's talk about that in a minute. But before we get onto something that might be slightly less light, let me talk about button soup. I expect you've heard about it.
Enlighten me.
You haven't heard?
No.
Wow. So for the uninitiated, button soup it's obviously, it's a really spiritual, creative, it's an outlet for my talent and my, I'm a very complex woman, Jacqueline, I think you can tell that. And this...
hey, we're all complex.
We all are. We're all dexterous.
Especially us women.
It's obviously the funniest thing I've heard. We're all dexterous. And and so, you know, I wanted a way to express myself. Now, to the uninitiated, as I say, it's simply a bowl of chocolate buttons. But I go for it. So I will have all the varieties of chocolate buttons. And then I might have a little Kit Kat bite as croutons. It's absolutely, I'm waving hello to diabetes. I don't know what I'm doing, but it's been my lockdown thing.
Glass of lemon water in the morning, darling. It'll all be fine. Don't worry.
Is that the answer? Hey, yep. Have you, what's your guilty pleasure food-wise?
Oh, God, mini cheddars.
Oh.
Cheesy little bites of goodness.
Yes.
And I can't eat them now because they've got palm oil in and I won't eat them. So now they've been substituted with hula hoops.
Okay.
It's also good. Specifically the beef-flavoured hula hoops. Because
really?
As I said, it's all about the damn meat, right?
You surprised me, though. Did you ever, before you stopped taking the mini cheddars, have the Marmite ones?
Oh, yeah. I did once. But weirdly, I like Bovril, so, you know. What
You're
can I
controversial.
Say?
I know.
Well, you were consistent. Marmite is, vegetable based. Bovril,
yeah.
Boof.
Yeah, you really. Please don't do the voice.
Sorry.
So you don't know. I won't sleep tonight.
I was allowed to be myself.
You are allowed.
I am a little bit silly, but
good.
Hey, at the moment we need that, don't we?
We
are serious.
We need
and
something.
And we learn better when we're having fun anyway, and that's in all areas of our lives, I think.
How has it all been for you, the whole pandemic?
I don't know where to start with that question, to be honest. Not without using some swear words, which I know I'm not allowed to do. So,
so work-wise, you have pop-up restaurants and cookery workshops and private dining and cookery lessons at homes and weddings and events. So business-wise, it must really...
The Calmsley business, my business, Calmsley Catering, has been the most severely affected.
Yeah.
So we are, a small company by choice. I turn over usually around about sort of just under the VAT threshold, so around £80,000, which is not a huge amount for a catering company. That means that we do anywhere between sort of 12 and 15 weddings and a few other events per year, but that's about it. To make sure that we offer everyone a really personal service, because weddings, they're special, aren't they? You don't want a caterer that's also got another four weddings booked that day. You want one that's they are your caterer, and they're not doing anything else that entire week, and you've been planning it with them for the past 2 years in every detail, and that's how we work. I love it. I love getting to know my couples and designing menus which they will look back on for years to come, and will enjoy those memories, because that's special, isn't it? Food creates such unique memories, I think, and it's a great way to bring people together. So this year I did a very special wedding at Balcombe Place, which is a lovely venue that we work with. I'm based in Ardingly, obviously Balcombe not far away. 15 people, and it was amazing. And it was very special because that's the only wedding that we did this year, last year. We turned over £1,800 rather than, 80,000.
So have you adapted?
Well, yes. So luckily that wasn't the only string to my bow. And also luckily I run the business from home. So having low overheads, etc., meant that I didn't have to automatically go straight into doing a delivery service or something like that, which some of my counterparts have done, and, hats off to them. It's amazing how, many of my contacts in the hospitality industry have been so inventive. And, I know how hard it's been. So anyone who's listening that's experienced that, my heart goes out to you. I know how tough it has been. I decided that I would take a little bit of time for myself, because I have a 17-month-old daughter, Abigail, who is delightful and a complete pickle, as you can imagine. So we had a little bit of time just to kind of, breathe, if that makes sense. And I think that's probably something I would advise with other businesses, that, don't just rush into the next thing. Take time to take stock if you can, and then move on from there. So I've always been really passionate about teaching other people to cook and sharing, good food together. And I always had the idea that I wanted to run a cookery school. But I always thought I needed some big fancy venue to do that, and therefore it was going to be something that was off in the distant future. We have these beliefs that, kind of sometimes stop us achieving what we think we, we don't think we can, if that makes sense, get those things. Anyway, just to cheer myself up and to kind of add a little bit of light to my fellow foodies that I have since friends and clients, etc., in the first lockdown, I did a whole load of free cook-alongs on social media. And I really enjoyed teaching people. And it just galvanized my belief once again that, the teaching side of things was something I needed to do. So I set up Positively Delicious, my cookery school, and since then we've been teaching online. And I've been doing weekly free cook-alongs, but also I've collaborated with some fantastic companies such as Ava Experience, Feast It, some of the others, La Belle Assiette, companies that are platforms which you know, put forward what I have to offer, but will also work with me to be able to produce something that I wouldn't be able to do without them. So, for example, Ava Experience, they're doing all of the actual ingredients for me. So they're delivering the boxes out. And then myself and my chefs, which many of them working previously in catering, now, you know, I'm training them after my experience teaching online with, you know, the professional kind of kits. We've got the lighting, we've got the cameras, but in their own kitchens, in their houses, and doing corporate events. Actually, yesterday was a huge success because I did my first virtual dinner party.
How did that work out?
Well, I wasn't quite sure how it was going to go, to be honest. And yes, if any of my lovely clients are listening, thank you to Lisa and Jonathan, who were the lovely couple who booked me for Lisa's 50th birthday. Happy birthday, Lisa, by the way.
Happy birthday, Lisa.
Yeah, happy birthday, Lisa. And all of their lovely friends and family. We basically, they approached me originally because they wanted a actual private dining event, but just for the two of them. And I said, I'm really sorry, I'm not offering private dining in people's homes at the moment. However, although technically you are allowed to, because, you know, like a cleaner, it's, you know, you're going in and offering a service. Mm. However, obviously, you know, I didn't feel comfortable that for various reasons, mainly because my parents are in my support bubble with my daughter, and I didn't want to put them at any additional risk as well as, you know, my family. So I said to them, well, how do you fancy the idea of doing a virtual dinner party? So I can, you know, we can design a bespoke menu with, you know, seasonality in mind and favorite ingredients and kind of cooking level of your sort of friends and family. And you can invite as many people as you want from all over the world. And we can come together with the same ingredients, and I can do a talk through via Zoom. And we can have some fun. I'll put some silly food jokes in there, and we'll have a drink, and we'll all cook together, and then I'll leave you guys in peace, and you can eat your dinner in your respective homes across wherever you might be. But at least you're eating the same thing, and you've gone through the same experience of creating something together, and hopefully, you know, it will be memorable. And it was such fun. They were a great group. And I've already been told that a bunch of them are going to join me for my free online cooking class via Instagram this Saturday.
How so often do you do them every Saturday, the cook-alongs?
Yes, I am at the moment, yes. And I plan to keep doing them until it's my fifth wedding anniversary on the 20th of February. And I'll probably just carry on the following weekend as well. So. But I'm not doing it that night. I'm going to get a nice takeaway.
That's good of you. So when you get all these people cooking, what if someone really messes it up? I feel so sorry for that person. So they're just sitting there watching everyone else glowing and loving it and sitting there and, you know, cheering each other.
Yeah, it's difficult because you have to try and make sure you don't leave anybody behind. At the same time, you don't get someone that's, you know, a really good chef who's done it all and, you know, a really good cook, and you don't want them to get bored, if that makes sense. So it is difficult to try and balance it, which is why you kind of do your research in the first place, to make sure you understand the different cooking levels, and, you know, you design something where people sort of have an option. So if they're feeling chefy, then they could do this as well. But if they're just kind of keeping up, then, oh, let's keep it classic, guys. You just focus on this element, if that makes sense. So they're using the same ingredients, but, you know, they might be just kind of interpreting the dish in slightly different ways, depending on their cooking skills.
So, you know, you said you cater weddings, right?
Mm.
And you make bespoke menus, I guess, with the couple in mind. So say... Mm-hmm. I don't know, one's from Scotland, you'll use Scottish ingredients. You know, I don't know, whatever the way it is.
Yeah,
have you ever thought this couple won't last? And have you? And what's the best?
Yes, I have.
And did you put less effort into that menu?
In the early days, you know, when you set up a business, you kind of say yes to everything and work out how afterwards. And I mean, to be honest, the majority of my couples are absolutely amazing. I'd say, like I can't actually, to be honest, I can't even think of one that I didn't like. But at the same time, I remember, because sometimes you're in their, like, their space, you know, you might be doing the catering in a marquee in their garden, and you might be using, you know, part of their, you know, home kitchen or something to prepare some element of the menu. That's what I was like in the early days, trying to keep costs down. And therefore, you know, you hear the family dramas, you hear that sort of stuff behind the scenes. Yeah, and I just remember hearing about one particular groom who I think he just got so utterly, entirely wrecked the night before the wedding that, you know, they didn't think that he was going to turn up at all. luckily he did. And we made sure, you know, we gave him some food a little bit earlier on. I got some carbs down him. I went and found him. I should have given him some mini cheddars here. He would have been fine then, wouldn't he?
What was the most...
but, you know, he needed a bit of a hair of the dog and some sort of salty carby things. And
yeah, you did good.
Well.
You did good getting him there. Yeah. And
but that was probably the only one that I was like, oh, goodness. But no, I think, you know, as far as I know, they're still happily married and I think they have a daughter now. So good.
Let's hope they're happily married.
It's a stressful thing getting married, you know, and sometimes us humans deal with that in a strange way, don't we? So
what's the most memorable menu you created for a wedding?
Ooh, I think actually it would be one up in London I did for the most gorgeous couple. And they wanted the main meal to be inspired by their late grandmother's recipe for beef stew. And the wedding was between Christmas and New Year. And it was in this incredible building, which was like a kind of semi-derelict chapel up in Peckham. It's called The Asylum, beautifully named. But it was, you know, the kind of the picture of kind of shabby chic. And I was the last wedding to cater there to be allowed to serve food. In fact, they didn't want anyone doing any food there, but I managed to persuade them because I, you know, had good experience and obviously lots of nice testimonials because it was a listed building, etc. And it was a very difficult working space. But yeah, the menu there was incredible. I also remember we had to turn around the room. So they got married in the same space. And then while we served, originally they wanted champagne and canapes outside in December. Like, okay, just bear with me. And I was like, how about we do mulled rosé instead, guys, with sort of star anise and orange? So luckily they went for that. So they had some hot drinks outside. And thank God the sun shone. Because while we managed to kick them all out outside and serve the food and the drinks, we then moved all the tables and chairs, or all the chairs for the ceremony, and then laid up the full, you know, three-course wedding meal and all of the, you know, the labels for everybody. They had individual crackers for every person in the space of an hour.
Oh, my God. It's so full-on. It sounds brilliant,
yeah.
Though.
It was good fun. But that was a memorable day, not just for the menu, you know, but, you know, for the fact that it was an incredible place to work. And again, that was quite early in my career. I remember I had this knackered old Citroen Berlingo that sometimes went on the blink. And I was driving up to London, all this stuff in the back, you know, I had my cool boxes wedged in. I had my husband wedged in as well. He was helping. Luckily, my mum wasn't on that one. Sometimes she, you know, back in the day, she used to come and help me, and she still does sometimes now. Only uni, usually on the wine tasting evenings we do, though, you know.
Oh, I bet she does.
Yeah. Oh, yes, she does. she's great fun. But yeah, like that was a fun one. I was living life a little bit more on the edge then, back in the very early days. But yeah, it's a lot more organised and less. You know, we've managed to kind of invest in the business as we go, and I've just got the most incredible team around me, and I think that's the most important thing.
It's a real. It's a real kind of responsibility, isn't it? Someone's wedding, but anything, like any, you know, a 50th, any kind of any do where they're going to get you in. When you said earlier about, you know, the chefs who refer to themselves as cooks in like the country pubs and how great they are,
yes,
I saw as
yeah,
well that you
are.
Were a MasterChef the Professionals, and I've always thought that about the MasterChef the Professionals. It's almost, it's kind of seems surprising, and this is a terrible thing to say. And I don't know if this
remember
is true.
That I didn't win. You can be
no,
rude
no.
About
it's fine.
It.
It's fine. But I'm sorry. I apologize. You were robbed. But I think it's the chefs that aren't at that point working in the Michelin star restaurants that almost feel like they've got more to prove, and they do. And it's like they're all invariably the ones that blow Greg's socks off because I think
sometimes,
he's maybe
yes,
not expecting
absolutely.
That they're going to still be really cutting edge or really up there. Do you think there's some truth in that?
Yeah, I would say so. Although I would say from my experience, and I think it's changed a bit since I was on the show, you know, what, 3 years ago now. But then most people that were all the contestants that I was up against, you know, I think the ones that were on that particular show, I'd say that the majority, well over 50%, already worked in a Michelin star restaurant. And yes, there were some chefs that came in from other areas. But the problem, I think, when, and this is why I didn't succeed on the show, was you feel that you have to present yourself in the same way as that Michelin lot,
yeah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I had a really great dish that I was going to cook, and I'd cooked it many, many times before. I was really confident with that dish. It was a beautiful fillet steak with a classic blue cheese sauce, you know, lovely Dauphinoise potatoes. I was going to do a hedgerow pesto to lift it a bit, and something simple like some charred asparagus, you know, just and present it really elegantly and just do it perfectly, you know, and I knew I could. Then 2 weeks before I was due to go on screen, bearing in mind I'd had quite a lengthy interview process to get on there in the first place. I think there was several thousand applications that year, and I was obviously in the final 49 that actually got on the show. To my knowledge, I think I was the only self-employed person as well. Obviously not many women on there, but there seems to be more of them now, which is great. I love other women chefs, and just, you know, I think the industry is improving in that area as well. A lot of chefs that I work with are more kind of flexible around working with women and all the rest of it, and family, etc. But that's another conversation. But yeah, so I think what I did wrong, and I think what other chefs may have fallen foul of as well, is they've not stayed true to themselves, because I changed my dish, and I went on there and I cooked something which I haven't practiced properly, which it sounded good on paper, but instead of having, you know, 4, 5, maybe 6 elements for a first round, I had 12 elements on that plate.
Jacqueline.
Can you imagine how busy I was?
Jacqueline.
And unsurprisingly, I didn't manage to finish it quite in time. And, you know, I didn't go through. That was it. I didn't stick to my guns. I wasn't authentic to my true self, which, you know, in hindsight, actually was a gift in many ways, because actually I felt quite relieved when I was coming home from MasterChef. Professional thinking, oh, thank goodness, I'm not going to miss all these amazing weddings and events that I've planned,
yeah,
with all these lovely
do
people.
Yeah, everything you've spent time building up.
Otherwise, and I thought myself, well, why was I going on MasterChef anyway? What was the point? And I realised it was sort of deep-rooted kind of approval-seeking,
yeah,
rather than, you know, seeking a validation from others, when in fact, really, you know, I could take that validation from myself. And I realised in that moment, because I'm a perfectionist, and I can be, and I've learned to be less of a perfectionist, that actually you don't need to be the best. You just need to be good enough.
Well, and maybe you need some button soup, because that I think
what?
That could have swung
button
it for
soup.
You.
That's what I should have done.
That's what I'm saying. I don't want to go on too much. What's Greg like? Quickly tell me.
Oh, my God, he's my favourite.
Is he?
He is amazing. Yeah, I loved him. Yeah, aww. He was jolly and happy and completely lovely and totally wanted to be there, which, you know, I'm not sure if the others did.
They have to eat cold food. I always think that about them.
Oh, God, now, yeah, it's stone cold. At
by
least
the time it gets to them. Exactly.
Yeah.
I can't.
And there's no clock in there either. So they say, I remember they said 5 minutes to go, and then, yeah, like 30 seconds later, they said 1 minute to go. And I was like, what? Huh?
You must never trust TV people. So
oh,
you've
yeah,
given me a life
one.
Lesson, which is be authentic, and I'm going to give you a life lesson. Never trust TV people.
I did much better when I did the Channel 4 cookery show.
With Nigella.
Win It, Cook It. No, that was when I did the one with Nigella, and that was also with Anthony Bourdain,
who
has passed. Yes, indeed. Incredible, incredible man. And a great chef called Ludo as well, who was great fun. I was paid to go on there as a practice contestant, and to pretend to be a contestant so that they could get all the lighting right and get all of the kind of like the studio stuff right, and also to kind of, yeah, I was just the dummy chef for the day, if that makes sense. So I had to, well, more than that, I had to just go into all these different places, and but I had to actually physically cook food as well, and it didn't matter what I cooked, because it was all testing, if that makes sense, that it wasn't actually going to go out on live telly or anything. But I was working with these incredible greats, and I was just a nobody at that point. But at the same time, I did get to cook them the most amazing, delicious chorizo scallop spoon, because the taste was all about just one, you only get one bite, just one spoon. There was only one load of that show, unfortunately, because I loved it. I thought it was great.
When you said all these greats, I thought you said you were working with some great grapes, and I thought, well, how great can a grape be?
Very good.
What's she doing with these grapes?
Come on.
Jacqueline, you've done so much and you'll continue to, I know. And will you come back and tell us more about everything you're up to?
Yeah, definitely.
Now, so how do we get in touch and how do we find out about the Instagram cook-alongs?
So if you follow me at Jacqueline Wise Chef on Instagram, you will see a post that says the Big Stack Burger Cook-Along with a nice gloriously juicy-looking burger. And that will have all the list of ingredients on it. And part of why I'm doing the free cook-alongs is I'm trying to raise awareness of regenerative agriculture and regenerative farming and how important it is to buy meat and other ingredients with that in mind. So eating meat doesn't have to cost the earth, for example. It's a kind of a phrase that kind of sums it up quite well. So basically, regenerative agriculture is a conservation and rehabilitation approach to food and farming systems. So it focuses on topsoil regeneration, increasing biodiversity, water cycles, basically just supporting biosequestration.
Yeah. You've started with meat and you're ending with meat. You are obsessed.
What I'm doing is I'm working with an amazing company for this called Always Grazing. They are a meat box delivery company and I'm using their delicious and incredible and very sustainable and, well, regenerative beef to make the best ever beef burgers.
Well, this sounds fantastic. Give your Instagram or give your Twitter out again, please.
So it's at Jacqueline Wise Chef on Instagram, or you can simply Google Jacqueline and Chef and you will find me. My website is jacquelinewisechef.co.uk.
Well, good luck on Saturday. Good luck, everyone. I might even take part.
That would be amazing. Thank you so much for having me. It's been so lovely to talk to you.
Absolute pleasure. And I can't wait to ghostwrite your book. What was it called? All About the Meat? I can't remember.
It was All About the Damn Meat, wasn't it?
Okay. I'll speak to you later. Take care. Bye, Jacqueline.
Good night. Take care.
I love getting a book deal there, not even mine. Let's look at the weather. This evening will be dry but rather cloudy. Overnight, a band of rain will spread in from the west with a few heavy bursts of rain and moderate breeze accompanying the rain. Minimum temperature 3 to 6 degrees Celsius, that's 37 to 43 degrees Fahrenheit. And tomorrow will be a much milder day, thank you, with temperatures reaching into double figures. Stop it. Any rain will clear to leave a few sunny spells. However, some heavy showers will spread in through the afternoon. Maximum temperature 9 to 12 degrees Celsius. That's 48 to 54 degrees Fahrenheit.
Phoebe Lynch. BBC. Radio Sussex.
Kylie Minogue and Say Something. Now, the song I'm going to play next isn't the kind of song we usually have in our running order, but I really want to play it. So I'm lucky enough to have two families, really. I have the Lynches and I have the Pearsons. And the Pearsons I've known 30-something years. And I moved in next door to them in a road in Stoke Newington a million years ago and instantly fell in love with them, and they were just such a fun family, such a brilliant family. And this morning my Pearsons and I suffered a loss. Ken, Sandra and Emma's dad and Carol's husband, sadly passed. And he was such a brilliant man and so lovely and kind of mischievous and naughty. And the owner, can you own a voice? Possessor of the most beautiful speaking voice I have ever heard. Hypnotic and mesmeric and gorgeous and a fabulous singing voice too. And he loved to sing. And one of my fondest memories was one New Year's Eve going into the Pearson's house and Ken getting his guitar out and his Beatles songbook out and us singing along for hours and hours and hours, and it was a joy. And it's so sad that he's not with us, and it's such a loss. And I want to send my love to Emma and to Carol and to Sandra. And this is for Ken, and this was his favourite Beatles track, A Day in the Life. The Beatles and A Day in the Life. So we've got Upload after the news at 9, and we've got some poems and we've got, have we got a song? I can't remember what we chose. And we've got an audio book and we've got an interview with one of the creators. And I'd love you to get involved. If you have anything that you're making right now, and maybe you have a bit more time on your hands than normally you would, if you've got anything that you're making right now, send it to us, bbc.co.uk/upload, and we could play it here on the BBC. Here's someone who sent a little track in and we're playing it tonight for her. It's a new young pup. It's Madonna and Music. Rockabye, Clean Bandit and Anne Marie. Oh, you know what time it is? It's Upload O'Clock. It's time for our first upload of the evening and it is a beautiful one. It's from Surrey resident Kelvin Oberetti and it's a poem called Journey of a Thousand Miles. The poem is accompanied by a gorgeous video filmed on a summer's day on Box Hill. Here's what Kelvin says about the poem. With the pandemic and resulting lockdown and travel restrictions, it's more important than ever to keep in touch with our loved ones. This is a poem that's written for the purpose of bringing loved ones together, regardless of the distance. Let's hear it.
Live and local.
Upload.
BBC Radio Sussex.
Let's take a minute to travel 1,000 miles. Never minding that we're thousands of miles apart. When life pushes us 1,000 miles apart, we create a path to be 1,000 miles closer. No matter how far you are, I'll always be less than a minute away, answering whenever you call, paying no mind to the distance between us. Let's take a minute to travel 1,000 miles. So we can both be together where we belong.
I wasn't emotionally prepared for that. Kelvin's with us now. Hi, Kelvin.
Hi, BB.
Oh, my God. That's made me cry. Oh. That was so gorgeous.
Thank you.
Do you write all the time?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I actually have 2 books of poetry published.
Yeah?
Yes.
What are they called? Who's the publisher?
So they are all self-published. So The first one is called Emotions and Belief. And the second book is called Poems About You. And the poems about you I wrote for my wife. So basically when I was proposing, the proposal was under the guise of the book launch. So this poem is actually featured in the Poems About You.
Kelvin, will you stop making me cry? What are you trying to do? You know what, though? It's a bold move. What if she'd said no?
Well, I know she wasn't going to say no. Yeah, I was sure. Oh, luckily, God. She did say yes.
Was she thrilled?
Yes, very.
Oh, it's so sweet. What is it about poetry for you as opposed to like longer prose?
With me, I just feel like it's the way that I express myself. And sometimes it just doesn't have to be long. Sometimes it's just simple. So I usually write in the simple language and a way of me expressing myself in the simplest way possible.
That's what I think I loved about your poem, because I think what put me off poetry, and this is a terrible thing to say to a poet, when I was at school and I'm learning again, was the poets we were kind of taught, it was a bit too flowery. It just wasn't the language that I would ever use or relate to.
Yeah, exactly. And like when I write, I make sure it's like in the simplest of terms, because for me as a person that sees myself as a good communicator, cause I've traveled to like a lot of different countries, lived in China, in the
really?
US and Nigeria. Yeah, I've lived all over the world. So I realize it's important for the person you're speaking to be able to understand what you're saying. So I also tailor that to my poetry. It's important for the reader to be able to understand what I'm trying to say and be able to connect with the message. So that's that's why I write and like my style of poetry.
Yeah, I love it. How long have you been writing?
I would say since about 2006.
Yeah.
So that was when, yeah, I started taking writing serious. yeah.
You're in Ash near Guildford?
Yes, I am in Ash.
How's Ash doing during lockdown 2009 or whatever number we're on?
Yeah, I mean, it's been like pretty quiet, but yeah, it's a good place to be. Abtungam just next to us, so when myself and my wife go for a walk, we usually walk from Ash, round Tungam, back to Ash. So yes, yeah, it's a nice neighborhood. It's good.
Have you found, have you written more or less, I know this poem was specifically about the pandemic and kind of, you know, bringing everyone together, regardless of distance, which is just like, you know, yeah, totally. Have you found that you've been able to write less, or you felt more creative, or how's it affected you, you know, artistically?
I mean, going into the pandemic in March, I thought this would be like a time, you know, to do a lot of writing and stuff. Mm. But yeah, it didn't quite work out that way because, you know, it was just good enough just to survive. And yeah, basically, I found other things interesting to do. But in May, I did set out to write like a poem every day in May called Made at Home. So I was going to make a collection called Made at Home, like
M-A-Y-D-E
at Home. But I mean, yeah, started writing about things in the house, things in the garden. And yeah, I tried for like maybe 10 days, then I gave up. But yeah, I mean, some beautiful poems did come out of that, you know, hopefully people will get to read soon. But yeah.
That's such a great idea.
Sorry?
That's such a great idea. If only you'd done it.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I was able to write 31, you know, but it didn't quite work out that way.
You can't force it, can you?
No, definitely not. So that's another thing. I'm more creative when I have a free mind and relaxed, and, you know, not under too much pressure.
How do you write? What's your, I love this about writers. So what's your, I'm picturing you. So I think you've got pajamas on. This is when you write, okay? There's a table by a window. You've got a decaf cappuccino on the go. You're wearing your pajamas. Is this how you write? Have I captured it?
Well, you know, like it's close. So usually, like for me, my writing process starts with, you know, thinking about it and writing it in my head. So that's the first step. So basically think about what I'm trying to write, like what I'm trying to create in my head. Then after that, then I start to like, I either write with the notes on my phone, or I actually have books that I write my poems in as well. So like the Made at Home one that I did in May was writing it in a book because I just wanted it to be different and actually handwritten, like when I first started writing. But then, yeah, usually I start thinking about the poem and the verses and how I want it to come out. And then after that, I start to put it in. Yeah, probably on the notes or on the notepad.
Do lines ever come to you at night when you're asleep and you have to wake up and write them down?
Sometimes I'm in bed and then just like, okay, I need to get out of bed now because if I don't write it down, I probably won't remember. And yeah, in the shower as well. So that's another one. So instead of singing in the shower, I could be writing in the shower. And the moment I get out of the shower, I run to grab my notepad on my phone just before the thought leaves me. So, yeah.
This is so great. What does 20... I mean, I know it's an impossible question, so of course I'll ask it. But, you know, what does 2021 have in store for you? Do you know?
I mean, I just started a new job today. So
have you?
Apart from being a writer, which I do on the side, I'm a chemical engineer by profession.
Wow.
So, yeah, just started a new job today, but I hope this year I'll be able to do more writing and probably publish another book because it's been a while. So I'm kind of done editing my other books. Like my first poetry book, Emotions and Belief. I think I'm on the fourth edition. Now I'm satisfied with the way the book has turned out. And yeah, I think I'm ready for a new project. And I hope I'm able to do that this year.
Is that a problem with self-editing, self-publishing rather, then is it you always editing it? Because in a way, you most probably need someone else to kind of say, no, that's great, stop now.
I mean, so because like I'm in control of my creative process, so usually my brother is a lawyer, he loves to read, so he usually proofreads my work.
Right.
So once I'm done writing, then just get into proofreader and probably some spell checks and stuff. But in terms of the structure and everything else, that's those things I do myself.
Mm.
And I like having that creative freedom to decide the way I want my work to turn out. But just to get like a second opinion on it, my brother usually, he would usually proofread my work. Since he loves reading anyway. So yeah, never complains.
And he does a legal check as well.
he
throws that in for free.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, because it's a strange thing to say, but I myself, I don't read a lot. So it's hard for me to plagiarize because I'm not reading much.
I'm teasing.
Everything that I'm coming up with is like genuine. So to speak. So, yeah. But
yeah. I'm teasing. It's just everything I write has to be double checked because I'm not diplomatic. What was I going to say to you? Do you have a website? Can people find your work or how can we find your books?
Yeah. So my book is available on Amazon. And also I do have a website. So it's called createdbykels.com. And also people can find me on Instagram at poetic_Kelvs.
Kelvs, K-E-L-V-S.
K-E-L-Z.
Just V, no S, right, cool.
Yeah.
Honestly, that poem made me, it was absolutely brilliant. It was absolutely beautiful. And I love that kind of term, simply brilliant, simply beautiful. Because I'm like you, I like it just kind of concise and precise. And it's more powerful that way, I think.
Yeah, thank you very much, Bibi. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
It made me cry twice. You did that. it's lovely to. And good luck with the job. How's it going? Do you think you're going to like it?
Yeah, I love it. So yeah, it's a chance for a new beginning. So yeah. So far so good.
Well, look, I hope 2021 is brilliant for you. And I'll check out your website as well because your stuff that I've read, I just thought was fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Bibi.
And we'll see you soon. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Lenny Kravitz. Oh, sorry, Lenny. Now he's never going to ask me out. So sorry. You're going to go my way. Have you ever seen that picture of him with that scarf? I mean, it's terrible to, you know, boil down someone's career just to a scarf, but it's a ridiculous scarf, but he's gorgeous. Talking of gorgeous, I mean, I'm saying that I haven't seen her photo, but if she looks like her mother in the way she sounds like her mother, then she's beautiful. It's Lola Lennox and La La Love Me. Lola Lennox and La La Love Me. Didn't you love Kelvin's story of having a book launch, and he was actually going to propose to his wife there? I'm so glad she said yes, but he knew she would, and of course she would. Why wouldn't she? Wasn't his poem gorgeous? Really? Oh, you know what time it is? It's time to drop in on a dear old friend, Mrs. Bunkerton. I know you remember her. We have a very special two-parter coming up next. It's from author John Saunders, and he's written a novel called The Vernham Chronicles. And this is an audio story based on the characters from the book. Here is the first part of Mrs. Bunkerton's Horticultural Dilemma, read by actor David Shaw Parker.
Live and local.
Upload.
BBC Radio Sussex.
However, that was then, this is now. What was she to do about the Hanging Gardens lawn?
Well, what is she going to do about the Hanging Gardens lawn? We have to wait and see. When? 10 minutes time. We'll have the second half of Mrs. Bunkerton's Horticultural Dilemma in about 10 minutes. If you're writing a book like John Saunders or a short story, why not voice it up for us and send it in? We would love to play it out. Head over to bbc.co.uk/upload. I don't know why the BBC people here at the BBC, where the BBC live, these people here that work for the BBC here on this BBC show, keep putting this track into the running order, because when they do, it means I have to tell the story about when I went on a date with Duncan James. And I've already said too much. That's right, Duncan. Blue and One Love. Let's take a look at the weather. The outlook for the rest of the week is going to be wet on Wednesday as an area of heavy rain moves in from the southwest over the course of the day. There is some uncertainty with the northern extent of this rain, however, turning dry overnight with clear spells. Thursday we'll have sunshine and variable cloud, possibly a few showers later on in the evening. And Friday looks to have showers at first, turning brighter later on.
Phoebe Lynch. Radio Sussex.
McFly and Tonight is the Night. So that's the sound of me moving a bit of paper. So I know you are sitting on your edge of your seat. I'm so sorry I can't speak tonight. I don't know what's happened. Luckily I'm not on the radio. You're on the edge of your seat, I can just tell. And you're screaming at the radio. Where? What's happened to Mrs. Bunkerton? What's she going to do about a hanging garden lawn? Well, look, stop yelling. Here is the second half of Mrs. Bunkerton's Horticultural Dilemma, written by John Saunders and beautifully voiced by David Shaw Parker. Oh, poor Mrs. Bunkerton. If you've written a short story or are making an audiobook, why not send it over to us? All the details are at bbc.co.uk/upload. Katy Perry and Teenage Dream. So it's time for our final upload this evening, and it's a track from Upload regulars The Circle. Here's their version of an old Georgian folk song called Nana. We've had some gorgeous uploads this evening, haven't we? That was The Circle and Nana. The Circle's album, Songs from the Heart, is available on all digital platforms and via their website, circlemusic.co.uk. And yes, the days are still short, but we are getting more daylight every day. So why not use that as an inspiration to send us something light and uplifting? All you need to do is head over to bbc.co.uk/upload. This is Biffy Clyro and North of No South. Now that was rousing. It's the end of the show. I can't believe it. I need to thank our brilliant guests, Jacqueline Wise and Kelvin Oberetti. Really great chatting to them tonight. BB Lynch, live and local, BBC Radio Sussex, BBC Radio Surrey. We are back next Monday at 8 to 10. Have a lovely week. Goodbye.